We are the leaders of tomorrow. To ensure we are well prepared, we need to engage each other in thoughtful conversation and build a more empathetic understanding of the complex world in which we live. I'm your host, Akash, and you're listening to A Point of View. In a few short years, Bitcoin has gone from being an unknown virtual currency to a $1 trillion asset class that's gained the acclaim of fund managers across the globe. After seeing growth of more than 500% in the past year, Bitcoin has gained the attention of everyone from Jerome Powell to Snoop Dogg. Today, you can use Bitcoin to purchase a Tesla in the US or an original chicken sandwich at Burger King in Venezuela. Sensing a threat to their ability to maintain economic stability in the long term, central banks around the world have been working to develop their own digital currencies. To discuss the implications of this new incarnation of money, we'll be talking to Aaron Song, a fourth-year international economics student interested in digital currencies and the prospect of a cashless world. How exactly are governments going to use digital currencies to upend traditional finance? Stay tuned for the answer. Thanks for being on the show, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
A natural place to sort of start this conversation is to think about just money itself. What's the purpose of money?
So I think we've always learned that money has three functions. It serves as a store of value, a unit of account, and a medium of exchange. In my most recent macroeconomics class, I learned that money really is just a means to an end, in the sense that it allows individuals in society to make trades with each other more efficiently than it was in a traditional barter economy, for example, and ultimately allows individuals to get something that they care about.
Right. And how has money sort of evolved over time?
You know, we started off in a barter economy where I would trade one good for another good with another individual, but it was really hard to make sense of, you know, what the intrinsic value of that good was, you know, given that we care about that item differently. We went into looking to trade goods based off of something that had intrinsic value. And we could associate, you know, the good that we were looking to trade with this value or with this item that everybody kind of valued equally. And so, for example, we used gold or even tobacco, I think. Currency like that has intrinsic value. And I think from there, we moved into using a form of fiat money, where the money itself, the cash, doesn't have any intrinsic value, but society as a whole has decided that it carries a set amount of value. And I think this was done because obviously carrying around gold became very inefficient, which ultimately led to the introduction of banks where people would store their money. Obviously gold is very heavy, so it doesn't make sense to carry it around on a day-to-day basis. And then which eventually led to the implementation of fiat money, where society as a whole just agrees on a value. I think money from that point on has really evolved in the sense that we have gone from this fiat money where it's just a, for example, physical sheet of paper that we have all as a society agreed carries some value, to a form of digital currency where we don't actually even see or use the physical sheet of paper anymore itself, but rather we hop onto our computers and we follow the links on our screen to help us make those different types of transactions. It has become a lot more convenient, but a lot more ominous, I think, at the same time.
And before we even get into sort of the cryptocurrency aspect of things, maybe we could talk a little bit about how money is created, because presumably everybody wants money if it has value, if there's some value associated with it. So why can't I go and just print out these sheets of paper you're talking about and just increase my wealth by doing so?
The idea of just printing money becomes very problematic. I think to put it simply, Akash, if we were to, you know, just print more money and there was just more of this in terms of supply in society, then the value of that sheet of money would obviously go down. I think we all want what we can't have, and we place value on things based off of, you know, in some ways, the availability of that item. And so obviously if there were, you know, tens of thousands of $10 bills, it would be a little bit less valuable than if there were 100, for example.
And that's just the base idea of scarcity.
And I think this also leads into kind of the idea of inflation as well. Central banks, I know that their primary mandate or their primary concern is to make sure that we are maintaining a stable level of inflation so that our currency or our cash here in Canada stays valuable.
I understand that cryptocurrency would be quite different insofar as it would sort of take power away from existing governmental bodies or central banks and put it into the hands of sort of a decentralized body. Can you talk a little bit more about the decentralized nature of cryptocurrency?
So cryptocurrency is a digital form of money that is encrypted and, like you said, a cash decentralized. That means that there is no central bank that manages and maintains the value of the currency. Cryptocurrency relies on cryptographic proof instead of trust, which comes in the form of transactions that are verified and recorded on a form of program called a blockchain.
Aaron, what is a blockchain? That's an incredibly complex word that we've heard in the news, but does anybody really understand it?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Akash. Let's start by addressing your first question. So from what I understand, a blockchain is an open and distributed ledger that essentially records encrypted transactions. So Buchi Okoro, I think, does a really great job at providing an analogy. A blockchain is like a book, and each user of this currency has a copy of this book, which is updated simultaneously to log every transaction that occurs. Transactions are verified before they're added to a page or a block, and the collection of pages form the blockchain. Cryptocurrency is also incredibly secure in the sense that all of your transactions are completely open on a blockchain. However, it's also completely encrypted so that your private information is stored in such a way that nobody else can gain access to it other than yourself. Cryptocurrency, since it is a form of currency, it would allow you to trade different goods with different groups of individuals who may be located all over the world. It cuts down on the need for the cost of exchanging different currencies, which is currently very costly and also very inconvenient. So it addresses that issue as well. These are just some of the reasons why cryptocurrency has become more popular and has evolved into a more common form of payment in a similar way that debit and credit had to become more popular over cash, for example.
The volume of cash transactions in 2009 in Canada was 54%, that's decreased all the way down to only 33% in 2017. Why, Aaron, are people opting for perhaps credit or alternative forms of payment to cash? And why does this perhaps point us in the direction of a transition towards some sort of a digital currency?
Well, I think that one of the fundamental reasons why, you know, people substitute away from one good to another is, you know, because that good that they're substituting away or that they're substituting towards is, you know, something that adds more value than its predecessor. So, for example, if we're looking at cash and a credit system or a online banking system, we realize that it's a lot more convenient on a day-to-day basis to be carrying around a debit or a credit card rather than just random wads of cash in terms of just convenience as well as security. And I think this was one of the is probably one of the bigger reasons why it's become more popular in this short time frame. I think this leads us kind of into this idea of cryptocurrency in the sense that crypto has the potential to introduce a new layer of convenience and a new layer of security that wasn't offered before with credit systems. Cryptocurrency, kind of at its fundamental level, avoids the need for different intermediaries, and so cuts down a bunch of different transaction costs that you would occur or that you would have to go through if you were using a traditional credit or debit banking system.
Bitcoin alone accounted for $6 billion of daily online transactions and was only surpassed by Visa and MasterCard at around 30 and 16 billion respectively. So interest in cryptocurrency is certainly growing, and Bitcoin particularly seems to be right at the front fold of this. While we've talked a lot about the positives of these cryptocurrencies and their ability to replace cash and transition us to a more cashless society, perhaps one that has greater safety and greater efficiency in the way we conduct transactions, What are some of the costs associated with cryptocurrency?
Right. So I think that there are many challenges associated with cryptocurrency as a universal method of payment, but I'll just outline my thoughts for two of them. Knowledge followed by access. Firstly, although cryptocurrency has been around since 2009 with the inception of Bitcoin, very few are actually aware of the mechanics and the purpose of this form of currency. Media tends to focus instead on more polarized results of the currency, from those who have made a fortune to warnings from different financial experts. This makes the currency incredibly unstable and risky. People are buying into the fad and hopping onto the train without actually knowing where the destination is. I think that this is especially problematic as crypto is often traded like many assets, financial and tangible, are. People buy and sell cryptocurrency in the way that they would financial assets or gold. Usually people make trades based on what they deem the value of a stock to be, which is normally rooted in facts. For example, a high quarterly earnings report signals economic strength in a company, thereby increasing the value of its stock. The value of cryptocurrencies fluctuates dramatically for various reasons, including media coverage, speculation, and availability. With negative press, some Bitcoin owners panic and sell their shares, which drives down the price. Vice versa with positive press. Elon Musk's single tweet, including Bitcoin, caused the currency to skyrocket. But I think that these fluctuations are exaggerated as there is so much uncertainty around cryptocurrency, and I wonder if this is due to the lack of knowledge surrounding the medium of exchange as a whole. The second challenge that I want to address is that because cryptocurrency is entirely digital, users of this form of currency require access to a stable internet connection to use the currency. Universal access is obviously a key requirement in order for crypto to be a valid form of money. And in order to achieve this, there would need to be a way to ensure that remote and marginalized communities are not left out in this new way to purchase goods and services. This is not something that is currently feasible, which poses a serious problem to the idea of using cryptocurrency as a universal medium of exchange. There is no way to know exactly what percentage of the population uses crypto, as all of the information is encrypted and individuals can hold as many wallets and have as many different addresses as they want. Interestingly, however, the number of wallets opened since 2018 have more than doubled from 22.65 million to 71.4 million worldwide.
Are there perhaps concerns related to the security of these networks, or are they much better than any sort of forms of payment that exist today?
I think that there will always be some risk associated with using a digital form of currency, but I think one of the biggest add values of crypto is the fact that everything is so secure and private, yet open at the same time. Ledgers are completely open and public in the sense that you and I could go in and see every single transaction that occurs. But they're also encrypted in the sense that you don't know who made this transaction and what the sum of this transaction was. Everything is encrypted and coded in a way that it's very incredibly difficult for any computer of today's age to gain access to that type of information.
And that brings us to the future of cryptocurrency. One idea that we talked about at the start of this podcast is that central banks might not want cryptocurrencies to dominate the future of money. They might want to have their own forms of currency that operate somewhat akin to the way that maybe perhaps a digital wallet would work, where central banks can directly transfer money into the citizen's direct virtual wallet compared to sort of the bureaucratic system that we have right now. And so what do you see as sort of the future of digital currency? Do you think it will remain more private as it is right now with this decentralized forms of Bitcoin or Ethereum or Ripple? Or do you think that there's a chance that it becomes more public with more digital currencies that governments are creating or central banks are creating gaining steam?
I think that's a really interesting question that is at the forefront of a lot of people's minds right now. And it's definitely something that I've thought about a lot as well. I think that central banks are sort of rooting for the latter of what you said, in the sense of introducing a form of central bank digital currency that would hopefully override or replace this idea or this concept of cryptocurrency. Economies everywhere are in different stages of implementing this form of digital currency. Like you and I mentioned, cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin is completely decentralized, so there is no way for central banks to monitor the value of the currency. Increased usage of this medium of exchange poses a serious problem problem to banks, as they wouldn't be able to complete their fundamental mandate of maintaining the inflation rate. Monetary policy would become less and less meaningful as individuals transition from this form of currency that banks effectively do not have a hand in. Of course, this seems like we're still a long way away from this reality, but maybe it isn't as far away as we think, especially with the onset of COVID-19, moving individuals away from using physical forms of payment like cash to contactless forms of payment. The Bank of Canada, I think, recently announced that they are currently working on their own form of digital currency. It's still unclear at how this will look particularly, but I'm really interested to see how the bank responds to the rise of cryptocurrency. I wonder how they'll leverage the strengths of crypto and if there is a way for them to integrate it into their existing monetary system. I also wonder if crypto will continue gaining more popularity in Canada, especially as the Bank of Canada has continued to modernize our current payment systems in response to this onset of payment systems like Bitcoin, with tools such as Interact e-Transfer as well as Open Banking. It becomes clear that the bank recognizes that cryptocurrency is on the rise, and they're looking for viable solutions that offers the same pros that cryptocurrency does in a way that can be continue to be monitored and better integrated into our current monetary system.
And so the question then becomes, Aaron, very simple, and it becomes my last question. Should our listeners buy Bitcoin? Is that what you're saying?
That is definitely not what I'm saying, and I'll make no such claims. I think that cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoins are incredibly unstable. It brings me back to my first point of, you know, the lack of knowledge that's being circulated around the purpose and the fundamental mechanics behind Bitcoin. So I would encourage all listeners to read more about it and see what it is really about at its core before you decide to invest any more of your time and energy or financial assets into this form of currency.
That is excellent advice and hopefully something that our listeners will follow. Aaron, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.